Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 99, and we're inside a week now to the NFL Draft, Dave. And lots of different stuff going on to cover, of course, the schedule release during the day and then officially last night to get into things. So plenty of stuff to get us into 6 days away from, aside from games, probably the most important and most enjoyable event of the NFL calendar.
Yeah, I tell you, the NFL calendar has moved right along this year. Draft time is already here, an exciting time, and once that happens, that'll keep us busy for the next, couple of weeks, thoroughly breaking down these players a little more in depth, and along with the undrafted 10 or so undrafted free agents that they sign. Then obviously the calendar will move into the rookie mini camp, and before we know it, we'll be in the slowest part of the NFL calendar, that kind of June to July portion, and then training camp will be open. So I like the way the NFL calendar is laid out because it gives us, it breaks it up quite nicely, and like you said, an exciting time with the draft now less than a week away.
I had to be amused last night. I don't know if you saw the final numbers. I kind of tuned in and out of ESPN's coverage of the NFL calendar. But they had some different guys, Darren Woodson and Lewis Riddick. And I love Lewis Riddick, and I think Woodson's pretty good too. But they had them predicting each team's schedule. And they managed to have them winning, NFL teams winning, 289 out of a possible 256 games. So it should be an interesting season with way more wins than losses. Of course, they're not matching up game by game as they went along. But, bias toward every team winning some games along the way.
Yeah, that's why every year when I make my meaningless prediction of every NFL game, I have to keep a running calculator going that way.
Absolutely.
That way I make sure I have my wins equal my losses, and inevitably, because I like to use one of those schedule grids, inevitably I'll be off by two and I'll have it all color-coded, and then I spend the next 2 hours trying to find the
game you got backwards.
Right, the game or two that I got backwards there. So all in a day's work of an NFL analyst, I guess.
All right, well, let's kick things off. I know you and Alex discussed James Harrison, and I'll just, as you mentioned, I'll just touch on this briefly. Look, in the heat of the moment, James Harrison's kind of un-team-friendly behavior over the course of last season is disappointing. James Harrison's never been a choir boy. His off-the-field stuff is well-documented over the years. He's a guy who has had a very important role for the Steelers on the defensive side of the football. I think you quickly get over the kind of minutiae at the end of last season as time passes. James Harrison was a really good Steeler who I don't think, to me, maybe the greatest Super Bowl play of all time. For sure, it's in the conversation. But I don't think it's close to James Harrison being a Hall of Famer. And the primary reason for that is James Harrison wasn't a dominant player for long enough in my mind. Obviously, he got a late start to his NFL career, bouncing around with the Steelers on the practice squad and with the Ravens a little bit. And he had a very high peak as a star player. And he was a star player, no doubt about it. NFL Defensive Player of the Year, along with Troy in the aughts. But to me, he doesn't hit the bar, Dave, as a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, and I pretty much told Alex my thoughts on it, and they were similar to yours, in addition to stating that I think there's 51 players, David, that have more sacks than James Harrison had during his career. And believe it or not, Joey Porter is one of those players. So now James Harrison did have a nice run of, what, 5-6 seasons there. But before and after those seasons, you know, they were just, you know, there were some very good seasons in there, and, you know, they don't call it the Hall of Very Good. You know, they call it the Hall of Fame, and I just don't think it's enough, even with the Super Bowl wins in there, the Super Bowl play, and everything else. I just don't think it's enough. I mean,
James Harrison only had 7 seasons in his career where he started 10 or more games. You know, I mean, that's just not enough. I mean, that's, you know, his last couple seasons, 2014, 15, 16, people know with the Steelers. I mean, you know, in 2016, he started 7 games. We can talk about, you know, starting isn't necessarily the perfect measure. You know, it's not, this isn't a baseball game where you start and you play the majority of the game. The Steelers can come out and have David Johnson in a 3 tight end set on the offense, and he gets credited with the start. But you get the idea. The Steelers were starting the outside linebackers as their guys 95% of the time. And I think it is reflective of, you know, just how involved he was in the defense. And he was a primary guy. You know, you can argue the guy for an extended period of time, but seven years is not, it's generally not a Hall of Fame career.
And they've been trying to replace him since when?
Well, yep. 2000, you know, he played one of the last season there, that 2013 season, the 7th year of getting, the starts was with the Bengals, and he had 10 starts. So when James Harrison was on the way out the door in 2012,
I mean, it's a testament to him being able to hang around and play as long as he did. And like I told Alex, you know, is there any doubt in my mind that James Harrison could play in 2018 as maybe a situational guy and register five sacks, maybe at most? I think he could, but I mean, just, you know, the NFL right now, the fact that he's really not, even though the Patriots used him some on special teams, he's not a special teams guy. In the day of the pass rushing specialist, really, unless you're able to do a little bit more than that, you know, until the roster numbers are changed or whatnot, is pretty much gone out the window. Now, let me ask you this, and I thought about this after getting off the call with Alex, the podcast the other day with Alex, was, had James Harrison had a great Super Bowl against the Eagles and, let's say, been named, you know, the Patriots win and been named Super Bowl MVP, would that have changed anything?
I don't think it changed Bill Belichick's view of James Harrison's role going forward. You know, Bill Belichick, Danny Amendola was the MVP. He's
no,
not
I,
in it.
I'm talking about Hall of Fame credentials and that kind of stuff.
No. Look, the guy only had 3 sacks, 3 seasons where he had double-digit sacks. You know, he did make a great play in the Arizona game, but no. I mean, again, it's hypothetical, but I don't think so.
We're in agreement. I don't think he's Hall of Fame. I think it'll be very tough. You know, his name might be brought up in 5 years, but I will be.
He's not going to be on the last ballot, the Hall of Fame. He's never going to be a last ballot guy.
I don't think so either. Where does he rank as far as all-time Steeler defensive players, though? Is he top 10 or?
Probably borderline. I mean, when you think about linebackers, you're going to start with Ham and Lambert. They're going to be ahead of them. And then, you know, you get into conversation about guys like, you know, who had a longer and maybe not a statistic-filled tenure, just a guy who was his peer in Lawrence Timmons. And, you know, where are you going to put some of these guys? You know, underrated guys like Brian Hinkle and Andy Russell. And then guys like, you know, Joey Porter and Lamar Woodley and those guys. So I don't know. He's probably not – you know, when you get into the great defensive linemen and defensive backs, he's probably just outside the top 10, I would think, without having made a list.
Right. That would be – and I plan on asking my readers in the 5 questions today if they – who would they rank, you know, would you rank Joey Porter over James Harrison or vice versa?
That's a good question. I'd have to do a little research before just giving an off-the-cuff answer to that.
I think the recency bias would be to rank James Harrison over Joey Porter. But, man.
Also, Joey, Defensive Player of the Year is a big deal. I mean, Joey never got that.
Sure. But Joey Porter was a bad, you know what, during his heyday.
Well, let's just really quickly. Guys, you would automatically put ahead of James Harrison. The linebackers, you put Lambert. Yeah, Lambert and Ham ahead of him. Obviously, Joe Green. Do you put Elsie Greenwood ahead of him?
Boy, that whole steel curtain, it'd be hard not to. But when you talk about guys that Yeah, you know, I think it's Joe Green, and then I think you have to wait a little bit on a few of the others. You know,
I wouldn't put Mad Dog and Fats in ahead of him, but I'd put LC Greenwood ahead of him. Obviously, you're going to put Woodson and Troy ahead of him, Mel Blount ahead of him. That's three more guys, so we're at six or seven already. And then you got a lot of guys like Donnie Shell and the Donnie Shells of the world, and all the other linebackers we mentioned. So, you know, depending on how you want to make your list, for me, they're clearly, you know, I hope I didn't forget anybody, but they're clearly seven guys who are ahead of them. We didn't mention guys like Kiesel and Aaron Smith and Casey Hampton and all those guys, probably just behind them, but those are, you know, guys who are awfully good football players.
And then there's even though it was a short span, the whole Kevin Green years. I mean, you know,
right.
He was quite something during his time in Pittsburgh.
Okay, that's him. Let's stand on the defensive side of the ball. Joe Hayden made some comments, and, you know, this is something that I have a kind of a pet peeve on this kind of stuff when – whether it's right after the game or, in this case, you know, 4 months later, when you talk to players about why they lost games, there is virtually no player at any point in time will say, you know, we lost because of talent. They're better than we are. Now, they might say after a game, we got our butts kicked, but there are not a lot of guys who inherently are just saying, you know, they're better, or they're more talented than we are. It just doesn't happen. And, you know, I think a lot of times they believe it, whether they're right or wrong. Get into each individual case. But, you know, Joe Hayden said, blame the loss on Jacksonville last year, the second loss, the playoff loss, to lack of communication and discipline. And to me, you know, I tweeted this out and said, you know, guys don't like to say it's talent, but I'll tell you, when it's the game, the 17th game of the season in week 18 or 19, whatever it was for the Steelers, and you're pointing to communication and discipline, well, that may be more damning than lack of talent, because there's just no way in the world. And I heard some people responded, well, Shazier was out. Well, Shazier was out for 6 weeks at that point in time, and Sean Spence had played with the Steelers. He came back to the Steelers, and it's not a one guy situation. So I generally dismiss them. But if you're going to make them, my response is, boy, that is damning across the board to the coaching staff and the guys on the field.
Well, it'd be one thing, though, if we never heard over the last 3 or 4 years communication brought up almost after every loss, right?
Yeah, and that's why I think it's even worse. I mean, it's, you know, it starts with the New England game a couple of years ago after the Patriots won the Super Bowl and the Steelers opened up there, and Gronk's catching a pass in the side of the end zone uncovered. It goes to the playoff game against the Patriots when Hogan's running through the secondary uncovered. These types of things, these are not rookie players across the board. Yeah, you've worked some young guys in, but these types of things can't happen consistently. Now, you're going to get beat, and, you know, guys get beat. But, you know, if it actually is communication and discipline, then you got to find better – you got to find different players, or you got to find a different system that the guys can actually figure out, in my opinion.
Right. But, I mean, like I said, this all sounds like white noise and Charlie Brown's parents to me by this
yes.
point.
Yes.
Because it just seems how many times we heard communication, you know, fix it, you know, at this point. Now, if this would have been out of the blue, him saying, man, we just didn't have great communication at all in that game, then maybe we could spend more time talking about it. But, geez, I mean, go back 3 or 4 years and almost after every loss, you know, we have either Carnell Lake or players saying that communication. Now, no sense talking about it without talking about how you're going to fix it. And, you know, we've seen this offseason with the addition of John Bostic and Morgan Burnett, the two things associated with both of those players right out of the chute were that they have made defensive calls in the past and they're good communicators. So I'll tell you one thing that we better not be talking about after losses in 2018, David, and that's
communication. I mean, you know.
Communication.
Yeah, we'll see how this plays out. But it will be, you know, if I were asking the questions at the press conference, it would be the first question of Keith Butler and Mike Tomlin that, you know, this has been, you know, is this a crutch of an answer, which you know, that I think that's a big part of it. Or is this still, you know, this is an ongoing issue, and how, what do you do to get it right? Because, you know, we've been here, Joe Hayden's a newer guy into the organization just this past year, and, you know, considered a, you know, smart, heady football player. And if he's pointing to that, now it was also asked of me, Dave, was this a veiled threat or a veiled knock on Mike Mitchell? And I didn't really take it that way. When I think about the game, you know, the defensive line got dominated. You know, it was all three levels. The Steelers got beat. So I didn't take it as anything toward Mike Mitchell. Do you take it that way?
No, I didn't take anything he said. And you know, I obviously do not know Joe Hayden personally, but I have followed Joe Hayden in his, you know, his NFL career throughout the entire process. He just does not come off to me as a player that would try to take a veiled shot or a backhanded, you know, shot at a player going back out through the door, such as that. So no, I didn't take in any of what he said. Now he did say, you know, he was asked to comment on you know what they need out of a free safety spot, and I mean he said what you would think he, you know, he would say at a free safety spot. We just need a guy that's a sure tackler, able to go sideline. Sideline to sideline, be over the top of the corners, be able to just be the blanket over the defense. If anything breaks, it's a 20-yard gain and not a 50-yard gain. So, I mean, you would say that probably about in defining a free safety position overall. Now, did Mike Mitchell miss some tackles last year? Did Mike Mitchell you know maybe give up his three too many of those cover two hole shots where he couldn't get over to the sideline? Did was he unable to get sideline to sideline or miss a tackle or two that result that turned a 20-yard play into a 50-yard play? I mean, the answer is all of the above. I mean, how many times last year? And it just wasn't Mike Mitchell, but how many times were there 20 and 30 yard plays that should have been ended at that ended up 50 yards or more and then in the end zone? You know, there is a reason why Mike Mitchell was not retained this offseason. And it had a little bit more to do than the fact that he was set to earn $5 million. So the change has been made. It now sounds like that Morgan Burnett's being brought in to play a strong safety role, and that Sean Davis will be moved to more of a free safety role. And the thing with Joe Hayden that's encouraging is, A, this is the first offseason he's had in quite a while where he's not been rehabbing from a surgery of somewhat. So that's encouraging there. And remember, when he was brought in last year, he didn't have a lot of time. And really, you could say the same thing about Vance McDonald as a built-in, kind of a built-in excuse, too. If there's two players that you should be more excited about this year than you were last year, it should be Joe Hayden and Vance McDonald because of various reasons, and one of them being that they now have an entire offseason to prepare with the rest of their teammates. And, you know, with Joe Hayden, that goes a lot further than just a preparation. He is what you would think would be a guy that would help communicate in the back end of that secondary, especially now that you no longer have a guy like William Gay, who is probably one of the most prepared and smartest players on that defense last year. However, he only played, you know, was on the field for, what was it, less than 300, right? You know, I forget the total amount of snaps because he was mainly the team's dime backer last year. So there are a lot of reasons to be excited about the direction this defense is going in right now, even ahead of the draft taking place. But once again, we will know four games into the season.
Four games into the season?
I think we'll have a good idea four games into the season. Definitely by six.
Okay, well, speaking of that, that's a nice segue into the schedule and it coming out last night. And look, there are 19 million ways to slice up the schedule. Everybody knows that we're not going to have a good evaluation of teams right now. I will say, I know in the first half of the season, apparently the Steelers stretched the schedule based on last year, which is relatively meaningless. They have the easiest schedule. If you look at a couple other guys, ranking them based on current rosters, they put the Steelers at like 24th out of 32 teams in terms of most difficult schedules, with the most difficult schedule in the AFC North. Cleveland checking in at 15, Cincinnati at 8, and Baltimore at 6. New England ranks as number one, defining it that way, just again with the feeling that the AFC East might be as bad as it's been in the Brady era, which is, you know, if you're a if you're a believer that the Patriots get it easy, and you think about the quarterback situation in the AFC East, it's hard to believe that things could actually be worse than they've been over the last 10 years at any point in time. But, you know, some will make that argument. So lots of different ways to look at it. Dave, what jumped out at you in terms of the Steelers and just the overall schedule?
No games in the summer months, the end of the summer in the Florida heat during the day. That's the first thing that jumped out at me. Remember the seasons in the past, either having to go to Tennessee or I don't know, Miami or Jacksonville. You know, I one of the first things I think I'd look for is, man, does this team have to go play in that heat and humidity in the month of September? Now, they do have to play in quasi-unfavorable situation, I guess, talking about the third game of the season playing down in Tampa, but that's a night game and part of Monday Night Football, and you know, you'll have the extra, you know, electricity associated with that. So I think the first thing that jumped out at me after when looking at the first quarter or first five games of the season is the fact that they don't play in Florida during the day, during that span, and that three of their first five games are at home.
Yeah, the game, yeah, the Tampa game Monday night. Weather, you know, you wouldn't think weather be a dominating factor. You'd think it'd be, you know, mid 70s and actually maybe, you know, relatively comfortable for that game. Coming out of training camp in Latrobe, the weather, you know, certainly could be as hot and steamy in Western Pennsylvania at that time of year as it could down there. Kind of, you know, the Browns, the Steelers have seemingly every year the Steelers have opened or closed with the Browns, and they get to open in Cleveland again. And I think if you're a Steeler fan, you look at that as a huge positive because, you know, you got Tyrod Taylor's going to be the starting quarterback most likely on opening day. It will be his first game in a Browns uniform, and you're not going to see Sam Darnold or Josh Allen or whomever probably in that game. So you get them as they're trying to still put things together with a very new roster and group of guys. So, you know, I kind of look at that as a positive. But you get into the schedule, Dave, and, it's, you know, the Steelers, they got plenty of tough games in the mix. And, you know, when you play Kansas City's and Atlanta's and you know, the Chargers and Denver and some of these teams who don't have a great sense for how good they're going to be this year, they're not going to cupcake walk through this schedule.
Oh, so you're saying there's 16 trap games.
16, yeah, right. Well, there are a bunch of trap games, and the other ones are really hard games.
Yeah, I've already had somebody tell me that the Denver game's a trap game. You know, they obviously don't listen to me rant on the podcast about using the term trap game in the NFL. But I tell you another thing that jumped out at me, David. The Steelers do not play any teams coming off of a bye this year.
That's interesting. Okay. I hadn't noticed that.
That's one thing. Look, I mean, we tend to forget that there's been some off-season moves or whatnot. I mean, getting the Chiefs early in the season and at home.
Yeah, again, right, same thing with the quarterback. Right, good point. Patrick Mahomes. So yeah. Maybe his, you know, what, third career start or something, or second career? He started the last game of the season last year, so I think third career start for him.
Right, so you get him kind of early there. Lord knows what the Buccaneers are going to be, this year. Moving on into the post bye. I mean, looking at the Steelers, and look, I mean, don't. You know me, after the schedule comes out in April, I always predict 10-6 because that's and normally that 10-6 will hold on into later on into the season as well too. But you know, looking at that at their pre-bye schedule, with those six games, I think 4-2, 5-1 is certainly obtainable. I mean, both of us are not buyers of the Ravens and Bengals this year, right?
Yeah, correct.
I mean, I think there's a decent.
The Steelers can put the division away in the first 8 weeks. I mean, you know, put the division away. They're going to play five of their division games in the first 8 weeks. I mean, it's wishful thinking, but if you go 5-0, you know, you're guaranteed, and the only team you don't play twice is, you know, the Bengals, and you get them at home the last game of the season. I mean, you think if you go 5-0, you're going to have a couple game lead on the division right there, right? You know, right at when you go into week 10.
You know, that's a great point. That is a great point, that five of their six division games will have been played in their first
week
eight.
Week nine, yeah. Well, first eight games, right. Their buys in there.
First eight games. So really, I mean, you want to talk about having something circled and on the wall. Not that it's not every year talking about, you know, making sure you take care of business in the division. You're right. If you can come, let's say you can come out of these first eight games with a 5-3 record and five of those. I mean, obviously you would hope to have a little bit better record than that. But boy, if all, you know, five of those, if all five of those wins were in division, boy, yeah, I mean, you really would be looking pretty decent at that point because of who those wins were against. Now, obviously, when you get into the second half of the season, are the Jaguars going to be the Jaguars of last year? You have to think that their defense, at least, is going to be comparable to what they had last year. And look, I mean, the Steelers couldn't even, they had problems with that offense last year. So you not much is going to change in the way that they probably want to try to attack the Steelers this year. The Panthers, anytime you have a quarterback in Cam Newton, you know, you have to respect that, I think. The Broncos, I know a lot of people are scared about the Broncos, you know, playing the Broncos in Mile High. But, you know, Case Keenum, right now I'm not overly concerned about them, nor am I concerned about the Chargers or the Raiders. I mean, look, I'm a John Gruden fan, but first season – you know, first season is going to be kind of rough, I think, back in the NFL. Then obviously you close out with some tough games against the Patriots, and we'll see what the Saints have to offer, that late in the season as well, too. So obviously I think the back end, or at least the final quarter of the Steelers season will be more challenging than, let's say, the first quarter of the season. But as we know and have seen so many times in the past, David, so much can happen during an NFL season with injuries and other type things that it's next to impossible to give a firm prediction on what might ultimately happen. But what is it that's so magical about a schedule release, David? Even though we've known that the teams that the Steelers will play every year by the time the previous regular season ends. I mean, it's just.
Yeah, I think it's the, people have good memories associated with Steeler games and going to games or watching games with their friends or maybe thinking about a road trip somewhere. I mean, I think that's what it is. And you look here, you get to play five games in prime time. And obviously the Steelers are locked into five of those every year. They're a big draw. And weather-wise, they should be in good shape on the night games. As you pointed out, Tampa in week three, the next week, week four, September 30th at home against the Ravens. That'll be a fiery crowd and things going on at September 30th. That should be good weather. And then, you get the Panthers November 8th. Okay, so that's a Thursday night game. That could be a little bit dicey, but it's still early enough that you wouldn't expect it to be biting cold. You certainly wouldn't expect, there to be 6 inches of snow on the ground. Then the other night games are the Jags the following week and then Oakland in December. And neither of those should be real weather events. So in terms of the weather and how things set up for the Steelers, that all looks pretty good. There are going to be plenty of primetime games. The Patriots are exactly the interesting thing about the Patriots schedule is their last four games this year are exactly the same as their four games were last season in terms of location and teams they're playing. Now they have three division games and the Steelers in week 15. But it's a quirk or a feature of this year's schedule for the Patriots. So they end with, aside from the Steelers, a reasonably soft schedule. And I think, two of those games at home, the last two games of the season. So I think everybody's going to pencil the Patriots in again to be the AFC East champions. And that week 15 game for the Steelers, December 16th, Again, you know, that could be for the AFC, you know, who first place in the AFC, you know, that definitely has that possibility. Steelers don't have don't play on any holidays. December 23rd and December 30th, which are the Sunday games. And they're not on Thanksgiving this year. So, you know, good in that respect, not having to do any of that. And yeah, it's pretty straightforward, Dave. I mean, I think you look at the games at home, the fun games for the fans, teams you don't see. Certainly the Chiefs and the Falcons are two entertaining games. And then you get the Panthers with Cam Newton coming to town. You know, the Panthers could be an interesting team. The Chargers, I think, are a talented team. If they'd had a good field goal kicker, they would have been in the playoffs last year, and then the Patriots. So I think if you're a Steeler fan and you like seeing good football teams come to town, I think the non-divisional schedule of the five teams coming to Pittsburgh, no duds in this group. I mean, you look at, you know, the Chiefs and the Falcons, you know, the Panthers, the Chargers, and the Patriots. That is a very attractive non-divisional home schedule.
And I think what a lot of fans will focus in on probably is the fact that they have to go, you know, to the West Coast this year. You know, Denver, for some reason, I get the feeling that a lot of people are worried about that game for some reason already, and I guess because it is in Denver. Your other West Coast game, of course, is later in the season. Travel out to Oakland, and that's a night game at that. And it sounded like in the interview that Art Rooney II had with Bob Labriola that he wasn't a big fan of having that night West Coast game on the schedule this year. But, I mean, look, this is a team that's had to play on holidays for the last, two or three seasons here, so you know at least they don't have that going against them. You have a couple of trips to Florida this time, and then the two West Coast games. But other than that, I mean, you're staying on the right side of the Mississippi for the most part, right?
Yeah, and you know that's been a feature that they, you know, I think it was last year, just last year, their total travel miles were something like 5,000, which is, you know, you take one trip across the country and that's 3,000. So they have certainly, you know, got a bargain that way. And this year, you know, they'll take a couple longer trips, but you know how that's going to work out every year. So, just the way it goes and you know, some fun. So also, you know, the flip side of that is if you want to go on a road trip, I mean, obviously, you know, New Orleans jumps out as places to go, but having gone to a game in Oakland, haven't gone to a game in Denver. Those are fun places to be. And then if you want warm weather, well, you can go down to Tampa and you can go down to Jacksonville. So, you know, pretty good all around. I think if you're a Steeler fan in terms of how the schedule lays out.
You know, I talked before on part of segueing into the schedule was, after the first six games, maybe we should know about the Steelers pass defense or whatnot. I don't know. Maybe not. I mean, you the one quarterback that sticks out, I think, in the first six games is Matt Ryan of the Falcons. I mean, do you consider? I mean, is Joe Flacco still elite?
Heck no.
Was he elite? I mean, Patrick Mahomes, look, God bless him. I think he's a talented kid, but we still don't know about him. Tyrod Taylor, we know enough about him over the years, I think. It'll be more interesting to see how that receiving core and all does in that opener, you know, against the Browns. But once again, you know, it's so tough, I think, on a team with a new offensive coordinator and a new quarterback and several new parts. I mean, the opening of the season, I mean, that's got to be tough. You know, I would think. And remember, no Joe Thomas there anymore on top of everything else. Yeah, their defense has got some players on it, but going to be interesting to see how that Browns offense plays right out of the chute. I don't know what you think of Jameis Winston and the Buccaneers. I mean,
Jameis Winston, I think, is one of the more interesting guys to talk. He and Mariota, you know, two guys at the top of the draft who have arguably been surpassed already by Wentz and Goff in terms of what they've done. I think, you know, talent-wise, I like both Winston and Mariota, but they haven't produced at a level that I expected from the way they played their second season to where they are now. They have not been as good.
I know what you think about Andy Dalton.
Yeah, you know, I keep putting Andy Dalton right around 12th or 13th. You know, I think he's a better quarterback than Joe Flacco. And, you know, we'll see again if they get some offensive line help what Dalton can do. But, you know, very clearly he has a guy who hasn't taken them over the top. And you can look at the AFC right now, and I'm not the first person to make this point, but you want to match up however you want to draw up the teams 1 through, you know, 16 on each side of the ledger. You go start going across top to bottom, and the NFC is so much deeper than the AFC. I mean, you can make an argument, you know, the 10th team in the NFC might be better than the 4th team in the AFC.
Do you see that article on the Ringer about the Browns considering drafting 2 quarterbacks?
I did. I thought of you immediately, of course. And look, the last team we saw do this was the Redskins, and they did it with RG3 and Kirk Cousins. I would be pretty shocked if the Browns went quarterback 1 and 4 in the draft. But certainly, you know, if Lamar Jackson or let's say the kid from Richmond, I mean, you know, pick whoever you want. We've only talked about the top 6 guys. We haven't really talked about guys after that. But, you know, they get enough draft picks. I don't think that's necessarily a terrible decision. And they cleaned house on their, you know, everybody's gone, right? I mean, they're down to Hogan, the kid from Stanford, he's gone. And everybody, you know, they traded the other guys as well. So, you know, it makes sense to me, but I wouldn't do it with 1 and 4.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it either, but it's funny. Now, look, had they not gone out and gone in a direction and picked up a Tyrod Taylor or whatnot, I've been screaming the last couple of years that maybe the Browns, especially with the way their history has been, maybe they should take 2 shots at a time instead of one. I don't think they're going to go that route this year, but I just found that funny coming across that article. Being it as we had touched on it in the past, there. What do you think about this year's draft class, especially when it comes to? I mean, do you find yourself kind of meh about this draft class?
I think that, you know, you got to kind of go through it by position. For me, the quarterback stuff is fascinating. So that'll make the first 2 days really interesting to see where they go. And, you know, I think we'll see some trades happen. So I think that there's enough there to make it interesting. When I think about, you know, impact players on the offense. So I'm interested to see if any tight ends go in the first round, and I'm interested to see where the group of tight ends goes. And I think it'll probably be the end of the second round, third round. Speaking as a position the Steelers need, the running backs, you know, obviously it seems to be, you know, one guy's ahead of the pack, and then you've got the whole group of guys who are going to go in the second and third round. Wide receivers, to me, I don't love Ridley. So I look at this group of wide receivers and think, you know, maybe the top 10 guys are all the same. And we see where, you know, Moore from Maryland goes, you know, back in the first round. Does Cortland Sutton go anywhere between 25 and 50 from SMU? So, you know, one of the bigger guys, you got the Oklahoma State guys. Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I don't see, you know, a bunch of it's not easily apparent to me that a guy picked at, you know, 20 to 32 is going to be impact right away guy. You have to walk into this perfect situation.
Are you excited about any of these players being associated with the Steelers at 28 overall?
I think Van Der Esch gets me a little bit excited.
More from a measurable standpoint.
Yeah, of course. That's, you know, that's the only thing that you got to go on, really. I mean, more so than Evans, I think. Just, you know, like you, I think you made the comment last week that, you know, maybe he's TJ Watt on the inside, and you know, there'd be a nice duo to have if he could come in and be an impactful guy pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, his measurements, the way he stacks up, I mean, it's just like an inside version of TJ Watt. But man, the whole 1 year starter and maybe it's part of the process now that you know, we've gone through a few more of his games, and I've probably zeroed in a little bit too much on his game against Virginia. Some of the ones that make you kind of, you know, turn your head and wince a little bit when you see his play in some of these games. Now, I'm scared to death of Rashawn Evans, David. You know, I don't know if it's the whole Alabama player mystique. I don't know if it's the fact that he's missed the time with the groin injuries. I don't know if it's his supposed 40 time, supposedly being able to be timed with a sundial. He scares the hell out of me. Van Der Esch scares the hell out of me. The two safeties in Reed and Jesse Bates, I view more as maybe second round guys. Should we be giving more credence to, Alex and I talked about this the other day. I mean, if Darius Geis is there for you at 28 overall, I mean, do you consider Darius Geis? Or what about a guy like, even though Mike Gesicki is not a what you would consider a Heath Miller kind of tight end. I mean, is he enough of an athlete and enough of a offensive weapon that you would potentially consider a guy like Gesicki with the 28th overall selection?
I'm inclined to say no on both those. And I think the Steelers can find their running back if they want to go that way in the third round and find somebody who's, good enough, and then reevaluate again for the 2019 draft. Gesicki, it's interesting though. Gesicki was an early riser, it felt like, after the combine. But as we heard Dave T talk about, if you don't think he can block, then he is a split wide tight end, and how high do you want to go for that? And then you look at the couple of the other guys, the two, not the kid from, as he mentioned, not the kid from Oklahoma, but the kid from South Dakota State, and say maybe he is actually more of a Heath Miller clone and would be an interesting guy at that spot. I'd still like to see the Steelers go defense with their first two picks. That would be my preference.
And judging by their pre-draft visits and the things that Art Rooney has said, being a defensive-minded draft and based on just flat-out needs and all, you would think that's the direction that they're going to go. In short, your jaw will probably drop if it's an offensive player, period, with the 28th overall selection, right?
My jaw would drop what? If what?
If their first selection was an offensive player.
Yeah, I'd be surprised. I mean, I guess at this point, with Bostic and Burnett in the fold, it wouldn't blow me away, but it would be more along the lines of somebody really dropping than, a guy like Geis or Gesicki being a guy they picked there. All things being equal, let's go to the other side of the ball.
Are you fine with Evans?
I think that's exactly the word I would use. Fine. Not that excited. Fine.
At this point, do you expect Van Der Esch to be on the board? There's still part of me, David, maybe holding out hope that a guy – now, I know a guy that would get you excited is Roquan Smith.
I'd be surprised if he's there at 15,
right,
let alone.
But, man, when you start going through team by team, Dave, we had that little exercise, you and I, three or four shows back. Man, there's only like maybe two or three spots, I think, where you could say, well, Roquan Smith would be a fit there. There is still a tiny part of me that's holding out hope that a Roquan Smith will fall. But, do you think a Van Der Esch Van Der Esch supposedly had, 18 visits or whatnot lined up with teams, and normally a guy that's high in demand with the measurables that he put up. Let me ask you this. Van Der Esch going to go off the board ahead of Rashawn Evans, right? Or no?
Honestly, I think they both go between 20 and 30. So, that's kind of splitting hairs for me.
Yeah, I would think that Van Der Esch goes first ahead of Evans. I'm not I think it's – I will not be shocked if Van Der Esch is still on the board at 28. But if I were a betting man, which I am, I would bet that Van Der Esch goes before Evans. Just something with inside linebackers and the draft and the first round. It's just not a position. We've seen three go in the top 28 or so in the past. But when you're trying to shoehorn four of them in there, I just don't see it this year. So I guess what I'm getting at overall, man, is I'm not intrigued by any of these guys. You know, where do you fall on with both of these safeties with Bates? And here's the thing: you could go back the last two, specifically the last two drafts with the Steelers. When it came, push came to shove with Artie Burns at the end, about this time, right before the draft, I had Artie Burns as a second-round guy, okay? And remember, I had done a lot of work on him prior to the draft, but I had him as a clear-cut second-round guy. And I think even Gil Brandt had him like, I don't know what number he had him at on his top 150. It was like 60 or 90 or something like that on top of it. So to me, that was a bit of a reach for the Steelers. Now, last year with T.J. Watt, even though I had mocked T.J. Watt to the Steelers in the first round in my second-to-last mock draft, but I jumped ship on him in my final mock draft, and I went with the Davis kid out of Florida, the inside linebacker. When push came to shove, David, I think I really had T.J. Watt as a second-round guy, too. And when you go back through, and specifically, not that it means a hill of beans, but when you look at Gil Brandt's top 50 or top 100 over the course of the last few years, it's certain his biggest misses in the first round have been the Steelers draft picks, as far as, you know, where the player actually went, as opposed to where Gil Brandt had him on his top 100. Now, that, like I said, that doesn't mean jack squat, but it's kind of funny that it looks like, and I'm sure Kevin Colbert will tell you this as well, too. And I think this is fact, is the Steelers have players they like. And they be damned anybody who says, well, they reached or anything. So because of that, I think there's a decent chance that a guy like Jesse Bates could be your first-round pick this year, even though I might view him as a second-round guy, because Jesse Bates...
I don't think a safety goes off the board before the Steelers pick.
Not even the Derwin James
kid?
Well,
yes. Sorry. I was thinking of... Yes. He'll be gone. He'll be top 10.
And I assume you consider Minka Fitzpatrick more of a...
Yeah, I don't really understand. Like, if you have a guy who's a corner, who can be both corner and safety, you try him at corner first. I mean, it seems kind of obvious to me. I don't really get the Minka at safety thing.
Right. I think Gil Brandt kind of goes along your line of thinking, David, because he's got... He has, let's see, where is the kid out of Florida State here? Derwin James, he has ranked 14th overall. Now, he does have Minka Fitzpatrick classified as a safety, but he can play corner, nickel, or safety. You know, he's more of a cornerback than anything, at least right now, and should be in our eyes. You start going through Gil Brandt's rest of his top 50 here, and it isn't until, way on down here, Ronnie Harrison, he has ranked 48th overall. He has Justin Reed as 49th overall, and I think he has Jesse Bates at 51st overall. So there is a good chance that only one safety goes in the first round or ahead of the Steelers pick. So the question then becomes, you know, is Jesse Bates a guy that or Justin Reed, for that matter, enough of an athlete, enough of guys that the Steelers just like that the need and you know that they just go that way?
Yeah, you know, again, it is a position of need, and you know, because, you know, you or Gil Brandt or whomever has a guy ranked at 50 or at 20, certainly doesn't mean that's where Kevin and their guys are going to have, you know, and Tom Bradley is going to be doing this for the first time, where they're going to have guys ranked. So, you know, again, I think you know, we've circled around the right group of guys, no doubt. And there should be a running back, and there probably should be a wide receiver in that conversation, certainly a tight end, and then linebackers and safeties, and then, you know, guys who might fall. But with the signing of Bostic and the signing of Burnett, it changed the calculus a little bit in terms of, if there is a guy that they love, it doesn't really matter what position it is. I still, if I had my preference, you know, Jackson and Randolph, what's it, Mason Rudolph, Randolph, you know, continue to get it wrong the whole draft time. They'll both be on the board, and the Steelers will move out and get a really nice haul to move back six or eight picks into the second round. And they'll get another, you know, have 2 second round picks. They'll get another third round pick. So it'll give them the ability to kind of, you know, add some more depth to this team that, you know, does need some more depth kind of across the board. So that'd be my ideal scenario, if they could move back six or eight spots and get a couple, you know, another second and a third. You know, that's what I'd like to see. So, you know, position is wide open. More than it has been in years.
In all the years that we've done this show ahead of a draft and all, you know, I've never been one. You know, you read all. I mean, it's every year. Steelers should trade down, or the Steelers should trade up. It seems like I've never been one. A, it's impossible to predict that stuff, and B,
sure.
And B, the Steelers have never moved out of the first round in the history. You know, in their history. But boy, if there ever were a year to be outside the facility with a sign. I wouldn't say protesting, but suggesting that the Steelers trade down in the first round, I think this would be it. I am just not enamored at all with anybody that could potentially, I think, be the Steelers' first round pick as we sit here right now, unless a guy like Roquan Smith was to fall. I think that they've done enough with Bostic and Burnett, more so than other years when addressing quote-unquote needs ahead of a draft, that I think they have a little bit more flexibility than they say in past years. Now, obviously, that could be some recency bias playing a role there. I'm not a fan of Geis there, but I would understand it. Here's the thing. If you draft Geis there in that first round, it's a slam dunk. You're not getting a deal done with Le'Veon Bell at that point. Not that that's not probably not already the case right now anyway. But I mean, you're not going to draft a guy in the first round this year and then then sign Le'Veon Bell long term and have that going on there for sure. I would be shocked. You know, I have brought up, if they went offense at all in the first round, I could see it being a quarterback. But there's now a tiny part of me, David, that wonders if the Patriots traded in now, you know, moving into that spot, a few spots ahead of the Steelers, I almost wonder if that's a spot where they might take Mason Rudolph there at that spot. Because Mason Rudolph checks a lot of boxes on the old Bill Parcells 7 things to look for in a draftable quarterback, and we all know Bill Belichick is Bill Parcells' disciple there. So, you know, putting my tinfoil hat on there, I can see those dots being connected there. But man, if you're right, if there was a year where let me ask you this: would you be a fan of them moving up, say, 8 spots for a guy like Roquan Smith?
I mean, I don't know what they can give up. I mean, you'd have to give up your second round pick to do that, maybe more. So not really. I mean, I think depth needs are important enough. Look, it'd be attractive. I don't think it'd be there at 20, but you know, to imagine that, you know, let's say the Steelers want to move up 14 spots to you know, the middle of the draft, probably cost you your second this year and your second next year. I just think that's too much.
Do you want more? Assuming,
and this I want quantity this year.
Well, they normally have quantity every year, you know. You have to go back to what?
That was what, the McShay thing that you corrected him on. that tweet that he put out that they have, you know, they keep their picks.
Yeah, but what was the year they only had like five picks? Was that the William Gay draft, the 2005 draft, or what? How many positions can you draft this year that have a legitimate chance, I guess, at making the 53?
Offensive line, wide receiver, tight end, defensive line, inside linebacker, outside linebacker. I think corner's the least likely in this. It's defense and then safety.
You really think you can draft an offensive lineman at outside of
fifth round? You get an offensive lineman? Yeah, I think you can get a fifth round offensive lineman to make the team.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree with you there. But, I mean, look, they've only lost one guy, and that was Hubbard, you know? And you got a guy in Filer that can kind of play the Hubbard role, if you will. You got Finney. I know Ramon Foster's a little bit older, but I mean, Finney.
Well, you know, the wild card on that line is the kid from LSU. I mean, he's the, you know, fourth round pick 2 years ago.
Yeah, Gerald Hawkins. Yeah,
he's the wild card.
I suppose. I mean, obviously, inside linebacker, you can draft one of those to make the roster. You can do so with safety. Are you going to find a cornerback? I mean, I suppose you could.
If you think Brian Allen can play, you know, you got five guys on the roster already. I mean, you know, I'm counting Sutton as a cornerback. You got the two starters and those two guys, and then, you know, they brought back what's his name. So, you know, you got, I think corner, you got your guys.
I mean, you got Sensabaugh in there.
That's another guy.
That's expendable, but you got Sutton. You got Hilton, you got Hayden, you got Burns, and you got Allen.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, obviously, Sensabaugh is upgradable. So, I think.
But you're not going to carry six corners.
You're not?
Okay. Yeah, you know what? Yeah, you might. I guess you might. You carried all those guys last year, so I guess you could.
I mean, 6-4, right? I mean.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I'd like them to. Yeah, that'll be interesting to see because what do we say? They have, you know, how many safeties do they have on the roster that are making the team right now? Three? Two?
Two? Burnett and Sean. I mean, Burnett and Sean Davis. I mean, you can circle. Nat Burray.
He's going to make the team. So right, and then right. And then you've got, you know, the Dangerfields of the world who are, you know, whatever.
Right. Wilcox, you know, I hope he's renting.
right, JJ.
So, all right, you know, so now when you look at a safety in this draft, I mean, Burry's a big hitter. I mean, do you view him? I here's where I'm going. Do you want your safety that you draft to be more of a strong safety type, or more of a free safety type, or do you want him kind of, you know, the Steelers will tell you he needs to be versatile and that he will be versatile, but right out of the chute, what are you drafting? Your safety to hopefully.
I want somebody who's fast as hell.
So you want somebody that, you know, up there on the P spark score, right?
Yeah. Look, I mean, you got Burnett. He can play down in the box. You know, Mike Hilton can do a variety of things. You know, maybe eventually Cam Sutton can do some of those different things. I want somebody who can fly back there.
Okay. So with that. If you look at the P spark scores, Justin Reed, boy, 135 score. You get into a Jesse Bates is on down the line at 115.5. I mean, if you're talking about Uber athletes right now, Troy Apke, the kid out of Penn State. Leads the P spark scores with 147. Terrell Edmonds, a kid out of Virginia Tech, is this a kid that maybe we should be paying more attention to? Potentially being maybe the Steelers' second or third round draft
pick. Yeah, I saw somebody had him going in the second round recently, which surprised me.
You know, the kid out of Virginia Tech, I mean, he's 21 and a half years old, uber athletic. Does Justin Reed scare you at all from a character standpoint, being as his last name is Reed?
You know, not overly. I'll tell you what I think is interesting is how the safety market developed. And was it – so the question is, you know, were NFL GMs and free agency thinking that, look, you know, this position is – you know, we've overvalued this position, or were they thinking, look, we can find a 50 of these guys in the draft at, you know, a tenth of the price, so we'll just get one in the draft. So I'd be interested to know what the thinking was. You know, obviously there's no consensus to that type of stuff, but I think there was, you know, a couple different things going on there.
You know, going by what you said, you're wanting an uber athletic, you know, safety. I mean, and we're assuming Derwin James is going to be off the board as well too. That pretty much leaves you with Justin Reed, I think. You know, as far as first round guys go.
I think that's definitely, you're right. Yes.
Okay, now if you're looking at and look, I mean, make no mistake about it, the Steelers like, I mean, look at the P Spark score of Watt. Look at the P Spark score of Artie Burns before that. Man, they like these athletic guys. So if you're looking at linebackers, you got to hope that a guy like Leighton Vander Esch drops to you. And if not, I mean. Sorry, Rashawn Evans. I mean, we just don't have enough of your triangle numbers, your overall numbers right now. It to me, I think it would be quite the discussion the rest of the offseason should Rashawn Evans be the pick. But look, we got a week to go now until a little more than a week to go until we have to put these put our final predictions out there. But I just got to say, David. I'm just not overly impressed right now with the guys that we're trying to pencil in at the 28th overall selection.
Yeah, and hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll have Dane Brugler join us. If you haven't checked out his draft guide, it's highly recommended. So hopefully he'll join us Tuesday. You know, our coverage next week, we'll obviously have a show Friday talking about the pick. We'll do something on Saturday. You know, we'll have plenty of coverage for you. We'll lay it out for you as the week goes on.
You taking the Steelers minus 6.5 in week one?
I just saw somebody put up a said they felt like the real line should be 3. You know, Steelers on the road, week one against the Browns. Hasn't always been, you know, it feels like that's the right line. You know, it feels like we should say automatically the Steelers blow them out. See what the Browns do here in the draft. Yeah, look, I'm as people know, I've been rooting for the Browns to be a competitive team here. And this is finally the time where they've gone out and signed some free agents. Hopefully they get some players in the draft and rather see them be the competitive team out of Ohio versus the Bengals if I had to pick one.
All right, Steelers will wear their color rush against the Carolina Panthers during that Thursday night game.
No, the color rush is done, isn't it?
No. Rooney come out and told Bob Labriola. He said, we got them. We want to wear them until we're told differently. We're planning on wearing them and plan on wearing them against the Carolina Panthers.
I like everybody's color rush. And so, you know, I read something earlier that the color rush was out this year. So it'll be interesting to see if the Steelers are bucking the trend here. You know, they're going to have throwbacks. They've got their jersey. They're going to show them out. He said they're going to release the throwback in mid-May. They picked the jersey. They just don't know what game they're going to wear it for, the last I saw.
Right, and he said that we like our color rush uniforms, and we plan to wear them that night until somebody tells us we're not supposed to do that. The big blowback was from Fox saying that they weren't going to require it. I don't think that they don't need gimmicks or whatnot, you know, color rush. But
if somebody wants in a game because of the color of the uniform, it's just silly stuff. But, you know, I mean, I get the for people who were colorblind in that game where the red and the green, they couldn't tell the difference. Okay, I get it. But, you know, let's have some fun with the uniforms.
Yeah, I mean, look, I like those all black with gold. I think those those are sharp. And I'm hoping that this year's throwback is the old Batman 61 uniform or 66 uniforms. You know, that had the kind of the cowl on it. You know, the yellow yoke yoke on it.
I'll have to go back and look.
Yeah, those are pretty sharp. That's what I'm hoping the throwback jerseys are this year. And who knows how many times they'll wear them at least once. Maybe they'll find a second game to wear them in as well. All right, David Todd. Until Tuesday, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M Todd. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. You can email the show theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and you want to donate to the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com, find that donate button up right navigational bar, and have a great weekend, David Todd.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.